That was I Can Start a Fire by Alex Call and Lisa Carey from their CD Passion and Purpose. My name's Quint Studer, and welcome to Talk Zone Radio. The purpose of this show is to provide healthcare professionals tools and techniques in order to improve patient care. As I said, my name's Quint Studer. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Studer Group, a company whose mission is to make healthcare better for patients to receive care, employees to work, and physicians to practice medicine. And with that being said, what better topic today than to talk about HCAHPS? And we're going to talk about what HCAHPS stands for, and we have a real national expert with us, Karen Cook. I first met Karen Cook December of 1999. Karen came to a presentation I was doing at Sarasota Memorial Hospital. And luckily, she was one of our very first employees at Studer Group, and she's been a true difference maker. And I'm going to ask her a little bit about her, but she's really, over the last years, been on the forefront of the national movement to do a better job monitoring quality of care for patients and publicly reporting this out, that not only talks about how does the patient feel, let's say, satisfaction, but also really ties in some key clinical competencies that we know that every patient wants to make sure they see from their healthcare provider. So, Karen, welcome to Talk Zone Radio.
Thanks, Quinn.
It's so nice to see you. You know, you're on the road and I'm on the road, and like this is the most we've been together almost in a while.
I know. I've missed learning from you. Well, you know, I've heard you probably 500 times talk, and every time I take away something different I can do. So.
Well, you know, because I'm out in the field. I was this week I've been in South Carolina, and I also hear a lot of other speakers, you know, and it's so fun because whenever I go to an organization, one of the first things I ask them is, if you had one thing you really do well that you felt if all hospitals did across the country, what would that be? And, you know, I was in Medical University of South Carolina, and they said, well, we really do a nice job with our house staff. We really do a nice job developing and training house staff. And then I went to Columbia to Palmetto, and I asked them what's one of their best practices, and they said, you know, we really do employ forms well. So, you know, I figured out the other day at Studer Group that we're on the road, some coaches in a hospital, about 400 days a month. So that's 4,800 days a year we're in healthcare organizations. And I think really learning from them. We're the disseminators, but certainly our classroom is all these great organizations we get to work with. And you've worked with many great, great leaders in good organizations. But for our listening audience, I know all about your family. I even know which basketball and football team you root for.
You've definitely followed that for a lot of years.
And why don't you tell the audience about you, because you're a registered nurse.
I'm a registered nurse. I've been a nurse for about 30 years. I've worked in all avenues of leadership in terms of nursing, but then I also worked in medical staff development, recruiting physicians, and I'm married to a physician. So that gives me kind of a unique aspect as well.
Right. Randy's internal medicine or family practice?
He's internal medicine.
Right.
So, and actually has been featured in a couple of different books about patient satisfaction in the outpatient office. So I worked in his office. So I like to take a little bit of credit for that, you know, hired some of the people and set up some of the protocols. But really, it's just, you know, some key things. He's actually read several of your books. So
I think, family practitioners or internal medicine, primary care physicians are in such the front line.
Yes,
and they feel the change in healthcare. And they're in the middle. You know, they're not only seeing the patient, but they've got to have great service from the specialist and the hospital to be effective. You have three children. Tell everybody about your children.
Three children, graduated from college and all gainfully employed. So
they're on
somebody else's payroll, actually. Two are in healthcare, working in hospitals. One's actually a transporter, which, mm-hmm. you know, you said earlier, if you had to go into hospitals and say, what's the one thing that you do well? I know that I'm in a good organization when I can go into a hospital and they tell me that they do a really good job of engaging their frontline staff, like their transporters, like their nurse aides. They do leadership training specifically for them. And I know at that point, this is going to be a good hospital.
Yeah, I was in a hospital the other day and they actually had an empty room. And what they did is they created it as a training room. And they had frontline staff, let's say from environmental services, go in. And they not only work on the cleaning of the room and the sanitation of the room, but they're working on the keywords, which was really neat. So when you're cleaning a room, what keywords can you use to reduce the patient's anxiety about infections?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the first things you would want to do is let them know, how are we being judged? What are the questions? Mm-hmm. So, you know, for example, on the HCAP survey.
Well, let's go into HCAPs.
Okay.
Why don't you tell people, and before you start, I'm going to make a statement. 2 weeks ago, I met with 16 chief executive officers in L.A. On purpose, we invited executive officers that we don't work with, that we don't have a partner contract with, because I know what they're feeling, but I don't know what non-partners are feeling. Okay. So we actually invited 16 CEOs, and they came from large organizations all the way up into Portland, Oregon, to small organizations. We had three hospice CEOs there. And it was really amazing because I asked them what were some of the key drivers in their organization right now. And, of course, they all said financial is number one. Mm-hmm. But every one of them mentioned HCAPs. Mm-hmm. They didn't mention the vendor. They didn't mention any measurement company. And I really like what HCAPs is being able to do because, as you know, we always would go into a city and somebody would use this vendor versus this vendor versus this vendor. As we go into HCAPs, it really, for the first time, gives us a chance to compare all healthcare organizations to each other to look for best practices and improvement and to give the consumer a way to evaluate where they want to go and who manages pain better. So tell us a little bit about, I guess what I'm saying to our listening audience, I'm seeing more and more organizations say, well, here's our HCAPS results. Mm-hmm. Here's our HCAPS results. In fact, almost many of them are going solely to HCAPS because they find it was got confusing using more than one measurement system. Mm-hmm. So tell us about, because you were there at the very birth of HCAPS.
Well, no, I wasn't there. Let's clarify that.
Well, you were pretty close. You were pretty close because you were involved in some of the
pilots, right. And let me first define what is HCAPS. HCAPS is an acronym, and we use it regularly without defining it, and I think that's important to do. So let's define it first. HCAPS stands for the Hospital Consumer Assessment of Healthcare Providers and Systems. And what this is a standardized survey tool to gauge the patient's perception of the quality of care that's been delivered in a hospital. And this started in about 2002.
Right.
And that's when the survey questions were being developed and tested. And there was probably 3 years at least. I wasn't involved at that point of testing both cognitive and then everything else research companies go through in order to ensure that they're appropriate questions, that they're understood by the listening or audience or the responding audience, and that they can they're tested. So they came up with this set of questions, and it was piloted in 2005, and organizations were given the opportunity to pilot, and that's why I was involved with some of the early pilot hospitals. These results weren't publicly reported or anything at that time. However, that was the original intent. The original intent by CMS, which is the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, who partnered with ARC, which is the Association for Healthcare Research and Quality, to come up with this survey. So this survey asks patients, and there's very strict criteria about what patients qualify to take this survey. Mm-hmm. So they ask patients, what is their perception of the care during their experience in an acute care hospital? And what I like about HCAPS is that it's publicly reported. So as you said, we can compare nationally, we can compare locally. It is standardized. The methodology is very strict. You have to follow very strict guidelines. Right. And the CMS provides oversight to ensure that those guidelines are standardized and followed appropriately. And that's to protect the integrity of this information because it is publicly reported and people are using it to compare hospitals. In fact, it's reported on the government website called Hospital Compare. You know, so by definition, this survey was created so consumers like you and me could choose a hospital. So what I like most about it is that it is reported as a quality metric.
Yes.
And in the past, there's been, you know, some people who might have considered patient satisfaction as more of the softer side, and it is, because your level of satisfaction was something maybe different than my level of satisfaction based on our expectations and our experiences, right? Well, with the HCAHPS survey, it is a frequency-based scale. So what they're looking for in the questions that they're asking,
right,
by using a frequency scale, they're saying how often did something happen.
Right.
So that's what I like about this, and that's reported with other clinical quality metrics, which we've always said, our company, the people that we work with have always said, patient satisfaction and the patient's perception of their experience in,
right,
with their care is quality. How
right.
can we have quality? How can we have satisfaction with something if we don't have good quality, and vice versa?
And what I find too, Karen, is with our work, because one, we always coach people to make sure you follow all the guidelines. Because you know what? You don't need to not, you cheating's a strong word, but you don't need to skew the rules to get good results.
Yeah.
And you want to get good results because you got to have integrity with your staff and with your patients and your organization. But I also really believe we've always done it, but I think sometimes the reputation with, oh, satisfaction or service excellence, people miss. Our focus has so much always been on those core clinical competencies.
Yes.
I remember being in California one time to a nursing group, and we went over, we didn't even talk about the survey tool,
right,
went over the management of pain, which is a big key, as how well was your pain managed.
That's right.
We went through explanation of medication and side effects, went through discharge and understanding your home care instructions, went by listening and answering questions. And when you look at those, if an organization really focuses on these key indicators, these key steps, I believe the survey results will take care of themselves.
Yes.
But for the staff, you know, I say our goal is never to raise the HCAHP score.
You bet, right.
Our goal is to manage pain better. Our goal is to collaborate care better. Our goal is to coordinate services. All these things that we're going to talk about throughout this show. And I do like HCAHPS because of that. I think it really does show the frequency, the always.
That's right.
And I love that because, you know, we can go in an organization and I always ask a question, how many missteps does it take for a patient to have a bad clinical outcome? And the people say one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it does. It can kill a patient. So the thing of always and how often is crucial.
And that's something that we focus on when we're working with hospitals as it relates to HCAHPS, is with that scale of always,
mm-hmm,
how many interactions does it take for a patient's perception of their experience to fall out of that category of always?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer to that is one, too. And
right,
that's why every interaction, every person, every time, every patient, every shift, that's why it's so important. You can't, a patient won't answer always to those questions. Like, for example, how often were you treated with courtesy and respect? If
mm-hmm.
they weren't treated with courtesy and respect one time, they're not going to say always.
Right.
They'll say sometimes. They'll say usually.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they won't say always. And that's all, Quint, that's publicly reported. That's
right.
Why it's so important is, with HCAHPS, they only report the top box, which means that it's the most positive.
Right.
So for the clinical care questions, like you just mentioned, the nursing communication, the doctor communication, the responsiveness
right.
of staff, the pain control, those are all using a scale of never, sometimes, usually, always,
right,
with only always being reported.
And we know, because we do a lot of research in this, that organizations we work with in the area of nurse communication, for example, are 20 percentile points ahead of those we don't work with. And we're going to talk about tools and techniques later, but I want to go take you back to the survey.
Okay.
So the survey was piloted in 2005.
Yes.
How many questions are on the survey?
There's 27 total questions. 18 relate to patient care.
So it's sort of nice because it's not a giant. I mean, some
no.
of the complaints we heard in the past was the surveys are too long. They're
yes.
too hard. So
yes.
it's 27. And how?
And they say that it takes about 7 minutes.
Okay.
And
you said
18. To do the survey, if you're doing it
right.
like on a telephone call, which is one of the accepted modes,
right.
if you're doing a telephone call, it'll take about 7 minutes to do the survey. So that's really very short. time
right.
frame.
7 minutes, it's 27 questions. You said 18 of them really hone in on quality.
Yes, there's some screening questions, and then there's also some demographic questions that the government has to have. A couple reasons for that, two of them are congressionally mandated, and then there's some other questions that help the CMS adjust the data to make sure that there's certain factors that may be outside the control of the hospital. And if so, if the government will adjust for that. For example, if you're doing a mail survey versus a telephone survey, the responses could be skewed a little bit differently. So the government, once the data is submitted, will adjust for that. And the reason for that is to make sure, again, that it's apples to apples comparisons.
Right.
So there's some questions in the demographics that will help adjust to make sure that everything's equal.
Well, and they've done a nice job because, you know, when this came about, there was certainly measurement companies that felt threatened and did an awful lot of lobbying in this arena. One, some of them to stop it,
right.
and some of them to make sure they could be involved in it.
Right.
So I think the CMS really had to do everything they could to create an even playing field, and particularly looking at the future of how they're going to use it, because you are having people making major decisions of their life going to a website, Hospital Compare, and I'm sure they wanted to make sure that somebody didn't say, well, I didn't find that or that wasn't it. So I think it's been a slow process, but it's amazing. You know, when you read about books and you read about that critical mass, or all of a sudden, you know, somebody you don't hear about becomes an overnight sensation, and you find out, well, they've been singing for 14 years on the road. That's what I'm almost feeling about HCAHPS. All of a sudden in 2010, this has become bingo, and it's out there, and it's just absolutely amazing. So what happens is I'm a hospital, and all of a sudden it's hit me now. I'm going to really focus in on HCAHPS.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, tell me some of the things when you work with hospitals. How do you engage the staff? Because you know, to look at HCAHPS, maybe they're not aware of HCAHPS. So how do you engage them? And I believe to get them to say, hey, this is a good tool. I trust this tool, and then really not worry about the tool, but worry about what is the care I need to provide patients.
Right. So one of the first things we want to do is help educate them about HCAHPS and educate them that this is a quality metric. The patient's perception of their care for us as an organization, as a hospital, is quality. And our mission and the purpose of our organization is to deliver quality care. It's in almost every mission statement, right?
Right. Absolutely.
It aligns with our values no matter what organization, whether you're in Maine, whether you're in Louisiana, or you're in California. It doesn't matter. This aligns with our values. And as you said, when you look at the questions and you really align it and help staff understand that if they respond, if we respond well and have good results on our HCAHPS, it is a reflection of our reputation. We can't fulfill our mission of delivering excellent quality care if only 50% of our patients are saying that our staff were responsive to their needs.
Right.
So that's how we connect back with the staff is, one, let them know what the questions are and how we're being judged, and then help them understand why that's important. They don't have to understand everything about the survey and how it was created. What they do need to understand, though, is that if that same example, only 50% of our patients are saying that our staff are responsive, and our competition's patients are saying that 80% of their staff are responsive to their needs, and a patient or a physician looks at that information, where are they going to choose to either go or choose to send their patients?
Right, and I think it's great process improvement. I just am so caught up in this. I was talking to an emergency room physician who said that he's really been using AIDET. And for those listeners, AIDET stands for Acknowledge, Introduce, Duration, Explain, and Thank You. And he said he'd just been trained in AIDET, and he really did a better job explaining things than he's ever done before.
Right, which is one of the HCAHPS questions about physicians.
And he said what happened is he almost was embarrassed that the parents were so appreciative that he made him realize he might not have been as good as he could have been before. And he also said when he got done explaining, because it talks about that in HCAHPS, and after break here we'll go into more detail. He said he feels now that the patients are more compliant with his treatment plan because he does a better job explaining. And we're going to take a break now. When we come back, we're going to be with Karen Cook, and we're going to dig in a little bit into these questions, how they can help you improve the quality of care. So we'll be anxious to have you back here in just a few moments. Thank you. That was, again, Alex Call and Lisa Carey with I Can Start a Fire. And speaking of fire starters and difference makers, we have Karen Cook. And, Karen, gosh, we could have done a whole show just on break, all the interesting things we were talking about. As you said, with HCAHPS, 94% of the hospitals that use HCAHPS have an outside vendor that does some of the measurement. You were saying that some of them, because you don't want to make a giant, ask a few other questions that might be significant to their hospitals. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. With the methodology, you have to follow the guidelines, and you have to ask the HCAHPS-specific questions first. Mm-hmm. But then you have the flexibility of asking some custom questions. For example, one thing that's important to delivering patient-centered care is focusing on family involvement. Right. And how well did we meet the needs of your family or your significant others, your visitors, your guests? So if that's important to you and you want to use that you want information on that question for your process improvement, you have the flexibility to ask that at the end of the HCAHPS survey.
Right. It might not be in your database, because the database I saw this week was it allowed them to compare themselves to other hospitals in their state. And you know the name of the hospital. I mean, you can go to the database and say, here's the six hospitals closest to us.
Yes.
And how do we compare to those six?
Yes, you can only do three at a time, but you could do all of them if you wanted to pull it up. You can get information on every hospital that's reporting. And right now, Clint, that's about 3,766 hospitals are reporting their data.
Yeah, when I see it, I've seen newspapers. I saw a newspaper in Wisconsin print all the local hospitals and where their HCAHPS results were.
Yes, exactly. And you know,
of course, those that did well thought it was a good survey tool, and those that didn't either said
it's always that way.
It was the tool or it was lagging data were better now.
Yes, well, that is one thing about HCAHPS is the data is lagging. It's old data. And so that's one thing you want to just keep in mind when you're looking at your HCAHPS results. It's reflecting. It's reflecting your actions from things you did about 8 months ago, because there's about an eight-month lag time.
And when we put in pilots, we're putting in a pilot right now on side effects of medication.
Mm-hmm.
And we understand we might not know, but that's not unlike market share comes in a little bit later.
Right,
it's not unlike clinical research. And when you do clinical research, you don't know right away the impact, because you got to get your database at a certain point. What we have seen, though, before we get into the questions is, because HCAHPS data gives you so much, what we've seen is a more shopping of vendors now, that they're using outside vendors, but they're saying, we don't need all the bells and whistles we used to do.
That's right.
So they're looking at what's the least expensive vendor that can follow the HCAHP guidelines, mm-hmm. get them credible data. We had one hospital recently save $120,000 by shopping measurement vendors,
right,
because it really sort of evens the playing field. And I know us, because we do this full time, we teach hospitals how to break down the data, how to make it look unit specific.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gotten very, very good at this.
Yeah, well, now they would have to do that internally, because
HCAHPS
doesn't report at unit specific level. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, we sort of teach them how to do it, how to look at it.
That's right. Now, the tool was never invented to replace other surveys. It was invented to complement. So what we say is, if you've really hardwired other processes to gather information on your patient-centered care, for example, if you are hardwired rounding on every patient every day by the nurse manager on that unit, you're going to get that information.
Absolutely.
So you don't need to rely on a patient satisfaction survey after the fact.
Absolutely.
If you're doing discharge phone calls, you've got that information.
If you're doing that post-care phone call, what we find is you know that.
Yes.
You know what the patient's saying. And really, that's better than any tool can get you anyway.
Absolutely.
Personal experience on what's going on.
That's right. So what we look at is HCAHPS is just, that's a, it's a summary reflection that can either confirm or maybe validate the information that you've already gotten back from your patients. One thing I want to say on discharge phone calls, though, is we do want to be very careful that we don't ask the HCAHPS questions, because that, again, is that's not in compliance with the guidelines. So we, and the purpose of discharge phone calls, as we know anyway, is to ensure that in that transition home that the patient is safe, that the patient is understands their discharge instructions. We're not asking the exact questions. What we're asking is, how are you doing at this time, which is within 48 hours after discharge?
Right, and you want to know. I mean, if there was, I always tell people, I think what we teach, you would do whether there was never a survey tool invented.
That's right.
You would,
it's
you
just
would
good
ask
quality
about,
care.
Tell us about your pain. Is it better or worse?
Right.
Do you understand the side effects of your medication?
Did you get your prescriptions filled first?
Yeah. Do you have an appointment with the doctor?
Yes. Do you know when it is?
We've even had them with people say, have you picked up your throw rugs? Because what they were finding was patients that would go home would slip on throw rugs. And they said that was the number one, people were coming back to the emergency room, besides adverse effects of medication, was number one, was falls. Falls in their home. They're not yet as ambulatory as they would. They get up. I talked to a lady the other day, went into the restroom, hit her throw rug in the restroom, bing, hit the toilet seat. And it was those types of things. So I always talk about values, because I really believe if you read the questions, and if you even brought a bunch of clinical people in and non-clinical and said, what are you looking for in healthcare, they would pick these same questions. And it's just good value-driven performance, whether it's measured or not measured.
That's
we're
exactly
lucky, because
right.
I agree with you, measurement tells us, even though we think we're doing it, are we doing it? I like that, always or frequently. So let me ask you a few things, because when I read these questions, I really just love these questions. Number three, during this hospital stay, how often did the nurses explain things in a way you could understand? The never, sometimes, usually, always. And what I love about that is I'm such a key player in this explanation. So I'm a hospital. My results say I don't do that very well, or don't do it consistently. You're a coach. What do you do?
Well, we would focus on ADIT, as you as you introduced earlier, because what we find is that our processes and our tasks in caring for a patient are they're knowledgeable to us. We know what we're doing, but a patient may not know what we're doing. For us, it may be the thousandth time that we've done a CT scan, but for that patient, it's the first time. So what we make sure is all staff understand that they need to be thinking out loud, basically. As they're walking through tasks that they're doing for the patient, talk out loud as to why they're doing something. For example, if I reach down and check a patient's armband to make sure I have the right patient, I should be telling the patient, I'm checking your armband for your safety. So that's explaining things, is those key words to explain why we're doing something.
I was on the road, and I woke up with a, you know, I remember I'm a male, so my pain threshold might not be what it is. And I woke up, and I had severe pain just shooting across my shoulders. At 10 o'clock, I went to the emergency department of a hospital. A hospital we don't work with, they don't had no idea who I was. I just went in. I told the triage, the registration person, I'm having tight pain across the all the way across my shoulder blades. She told me to go sit in the waiting room.
Oh, okay. And you're very scared about this because in your mind you're having a heart attack, right?
So I went in the waiting room and I sat there for about 10 or 12 minutes, maybe longer. And then they came and got me and they put me in a room, and then later on a doctor came. The doctor asked about my back pain and left. A little while later, probably now I'm in there 25 minutes, a nurse came in and started hooking me up to an EKG machine. Didn't tell me exactly why, just hooked me up. Then another nurse came in.
Which just confirmed your fear,
Another nurse came in and said, here, take these nitroglycerin tablets and take these aspirin. Now, being in healthcare, I realized what they were doing was thinking this could be acute MI, or it could be something with that. Then they came in and hooked me up to an IV and started giving me some solution. And then they brought a computer in and started running a bunch of things. And every single thing, they never told me anything. And I'm sitting there. Now, I'm a guy, I'm 58 years old. Mm-hmm. I'm in healthcare. Mm-hmm. So I understood pretty much what they were doing. But I sat there and I sat there and was amazed that they just, I mean, just like I was just some, like almost you were putting two things on a battery of a car. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And just, and so I did, again, I'm almost sitting there going, I don't want retribution. So yeah. I'm almost saying, gee, yeah. Can you tell me why you're doing that? And then when they would, I'd try to do reward and recognition. But literally, I was there from 10 o'clock in the morning till 6:30 at night, and they ran some CTs, some other things, and the explanations were just gone. Uh-huh. They never occurred.
That's so sad because your anxiety is going up every time they do something to you and they don't explain it to you.
But I love the fact that they would have just, while they were doing it, it wouldn't take any more time, just say, here's what I'm looking for on the computer. Here's what I'm finding. Here's why I'm hooking this up.
Yeah, this may be a little cold.
Right. Yeah.
This is going to give doctor valuable information
right.
to
so
help us see about
your pain.
So we're taking
you to the CT. We're going to put a solution in you.
Yeah.
Now, they did do a good job. They must have had so many bad experiences. When I got to the CT, they did explain to me my body would be warm and it would feel like I was wetting
and
my
pants. And it truly does, doesn't it?
but, you know, because they must have had so many bad experiences, they did hit that one. So I agree with you, that explanation. And there are so many other ones. Care from doctors. During the hospital, did doctors explain things? During the hospital stay, how often did doctors listen carefully to you? We work a lot with physicians.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you work when you work with physicians to address this listening? Because research shows that a doctor will predict that they, you know, how much they listened versus talking, and it's much different than the reality.
That's right. In fact, don't quote me on the number, but it's very close. I think that research shows that a doctor will interrupt a patient within like 17 seconds
right.
after they've started talking. So one of the things that we do first is, again, help them understand what are the questions. These patients are judging you on these three things. This is what's important to them, that you listen carefully, that you treat them with courtesy and respect, and you explain things in ways they can understand. And so, again, like your doctor friend told you, it's the ADIT. We teach them very specific things they can do with ADIT. Like, I want to know how many times my surgeon has done this procedure.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me feel better. It reduces my anxiety. So I want to know that. Something my husband does really well is when he's done with the visit, he asks them, have I explained things in ways you can understand? He says that on his own, not because he knew that that was a question.
Right.
He just wants to make sure because he doesn't want him calling back and asking him a question when he gets home at night, right?
No, but you hit it. I was in New Jersey years ago, and I just happened to, hey, who is your what you consider your best physician? And they told me a doctor's name, and it was almost like everybody knew it.
Yeah.
And I asked the doctor if I could make rounds with him, and I rounded with him. And one of the things that he did consistently is before he left the room, he said, I don't want to leave this room if there's any questions I haven't answered
right.
or any concerns I haven't addressed.
You betcha.
And I said, how long have you been doing that? He said, I didn't do that my whole life.
Yeah.
And it just, to him, was just the normal pattern. University of Utah, I was there one day, and they had one of those connect-to-purpose moments that we teach.
Yes.
And a doctor got up and said that their whole entire group had agreed that before a patient left, they would say something similar. You know, you can do it your own language, but you want to make sure the patient knows. You don't want them to leave if they have questions or concern.
And usually you'll find that the most important question that's really burning on that patient's mind comes out just as the doc's getting ready to leave.
Right. Well, this is what happened here was the woman came in because she had something on her skin and she was worried about skin cancer. And after the doctor examined her, she was leaving. And the doctor said, do you have any, you know, questions, concerns? And the woman said, I'm sure it's nothing, but I am bleeding a little bit rectally. I know it's just hemorrhoids. And the doctor said, well, why don't we come back and examine you? Well, it wasn't hemorrhoids. It was rectal cancer. And basically ended up having operations in that. And when the primary care doctor saw this person as the progress was going, mm-hmm. the woman one day looked at her and said, you saved my life. And she said, no, I didn't save your life. You know, the surgeon, the oncologist, all these people saved your life, the staff. And she said, no, you did. If you wouldn't have asked me that mm-hmm. question that day, I probably wouldn't have said anything.
Well, I think you hit on it. It's just the docs that are really good and perform very well on that question do a good job of inviting those complaints or those concerns or those questions, and they don't rush to get out. And even just, it's not like it takes that much more time, but just that the verbiage, those key words that say, do you have any concerns, do you have any questions before I leave? Right there gives them that opportunity. The other thing that we do in coaching physicians, and we see this in the ED, is we put chairs in there so the doc can sit, because their perception, the patient's right. perception of time goes up dramatically. Even though the actual time spent may not go up, their perception goes up if the doctor's sitting. So just some key behavioral things that we do with docs is very critical. We also, of course, have to look at process. So do they, in like, for example, an emergency room, do if you are taken straight back and the nurse told you a doctor will be in shortly, I'm doing these things first to make sure he has some information right. before he comes in, you would have felt better about the doctor. And well, so managing that. Up anything we can do. Another thing that I watched, I followed my husband when he was rounding, and I watched him do, was he would always manage up the nurses to the patients. You're in good hands on this floor. Or if a nurse was rounding with him, he would make sure and say, Jackie's a great nurse. I'm sure mm-hmm. that she'll help answer your questions. But if there's anything else that you need, make sure and let me know. You know, those type of things. So it's behavioral.
Well, I like your point, though. I think, again, going back to the hospital and the ED, because we do a lot of ED work now because it's the front door of the hospital.
You bet.
But the fact that sometimes you are looking for test results before the doctor comes in. Now, I've seen a couple things. I've seen doctors, I've seen processes where the doctor will just pop their head in and say, Mrs. Cook, I know you're here, but I'm getting these test results run. Then we'll be able to talk. Or the nurse says the doctor will come in after your results, because really they need to see the results before they examine you. Mm-hmm. But either one works. But
you feel like you're still getting good care while they're doing those tests.
Well, if you don't, you're worried about the delay.
Yeah, exactly.
You're worried about what's going on. Again, you and I have been in hospitals for so long, we have lots of stories about that. So are you seeing in your work with organizations are the chief nurse officers, chief medical officers, are they being able to tie the HCAHPS into such things as quality, clinical quality, with the employees?
Absolutely. And in fact, one organization that I work with, that's a top 50 hospital, they're one of the leaders in terms of their quality. They've assigned each one of the HCAHPS questions to a member of their leadership team. For example, their chief medical officer owns and is on his evaluation performance the communication with doctors question. The chief nursing officer obviously owns the communication with nurses. The VP of quality, or the compliance VP of quality compliance officer, owns the communication of medication questions.
So they sort of create.
They're really engaged.
Well, they create what's the best practice, where we see it, who's doing it well. Because I find in most organizations, you don't have to travel. There's somebody in your organization doing it better.
Right.
And at least learn from them.
Yes, that's exactly right.
It's moving these best practices around. And you work with some wonderful organizations.
I do. I'm very
from
privileged.
From California to New York and New Jersey.
I figured it up the other day, and I've been inside over 200 hospitals across this country. So very fortunate to get to see a lot of things. But everybody has the same goal, and that is to deliver quality care. And again, that's what's so great about HCAHPS, is it's reported as a quality metric. And staff really embrace that.
They do.
You know, like my background's heart. So, you know, I've of course, you can't have a patient that has pain be satisfied with their care. But this isn't about satisfaction. This is about, if you've got a patient in pain, we're not delivering good quality care. And that's our values. That's our mission.
Absolutely. In fact, yesterday I was at a hospital, and we were honoring one of their managers, because in the HCAHPS pain question, they went from near the bottom to near the top, and they explained what they had done to communicate and manage pain better. Well, we're going to take another break here on Talk Zone Radio, and when we come back, we're going to dig a little deeper with Karen Cook, HCAHP expert and one of the very best coaches, in fact, a flame winner at Studer Group for the impact she's had on healthcare. So we'll see you in just a few moments. Welcome back to Talk Zone Radio, and today we're talking about HCAHPS, or the Hospital Compare. And talk a little bit before we to go into specific questions for our listeners. I know you have written another toolkit sitting here in front of you. We believe as a company, we're the first ones to ever create a sort of a toolkit to understand it, and you helped do that. Then we did the second one. And now you've got a third one coming.
We do have a third one coming because there's been some changes in the survey, so we want to make sure that we're providing accurate information. Again, our toolkit is going to be posted on our website, and it's not a step-by-step on how to do the survey. What it is is some good ideas on how you can impact a particular question. So what we've done is asked all of our coaches, tell us what you see hospitals that are performing well do on this question. The other thing that we do internally is we have access to all of our partners' data. Right. So we pull the data and we look at who's the top performer on a particular question, and then we ask that coach or we ask that organization, tell us what you're doing to get these results.
Right.
So you probably would like to know how to go online and look at this if you're a general consumer.
Or if I'm sitting in a hospital and I'm saying, well, how does a general consumer, how do we look? When the general consumer, and I will do that sometimes.
Yeah.
When I go around the country, people say, you're in healthcare, Quint, what should you say? And I'd say, well, why don't you go on? And I give them usually Hospital Compare. I might give them Health Grades. I give them a few places to go where they can get opinions on from users. And these are real users.
Yeah, these are patients that had an experience in that hospital. So, for example, if you're sitting in your hotel room and it's not an acute thing where, you know, you've got a little bit of time, you may just go onto your computer. You would type in www.hospitalcompare.hhs.gov. You would type in the website would come up. You would type in what city you're in, and you can get a list of the hospitals. You can pick three that you are familiar with or that you're considering going to, and you can look at how they perform on not only their clinical quality core measures. Mm-hmm. So for you, you would probably want to look at, since you're thinking back pain may be hard. I mean, that's obviously what you were thinking, right? So.
Right.
So you would look at how do they perform on their clinical quality core measures.
Right.
Then you would look at what do the patients say about their care.
We're looking at gallstone, kidney stones, and heart. Gallbladder, kidney stone. I mean, that was our
first
thought process as we were sitting there.
Yeah. So you can go on and look. Mm-hmm. If you're a hospital and you want to look at what can we do to improve on our HCAHPS results, then you can get our toolkit, and our website is www.studergroup.com, and our revisions should be available within probably the next 2 weeks.
Wow.
So, I'm excited about it.
Well, I'm excited about what you've done in healthcare. And let's talk a little bit about pain medication, because when I look at why one in every five patients, according to the study, says has an adverse event when they are discharged from a hospital. It doesn't mean the hospital did anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There's sometimes you don't know what's going to happen when somebody leaves.
Right.
And 66% of that was medication.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's just not the right medication for them.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're not taking the right dosage. Like my dad will always think he's feeling better and stop. Or if one's good, two's better.
Right,
and,
right.
Those types of things. One time, because I'm allergic to sulfa, did not know I was allergic to sulfa. And I came home and I was taking sulfa. Because I didn't feel good. And basically, they told me I had an infection. They gave me sulfa. And right away, I started having these things come out of my body.
Hives?
Now, this was when I was a special ed teacher, and my first thought was, this stuff's working good. It is just sucking this infection out of my body. And who wants to call the doctor? I don't.
Yeah, right.
So I waited and then took my next dose.
Mm-hmm.
And my next dose, it really got bad. So I said, I got to call the doctor. So I called the doctor, and I said, I've been taking the sulfa, and you know, my body broke out. And I said, it's even worse now that I've done it the second time. And he said, well, why did you do it the second time? And I said, well, you know, I don't know. So we know we're working really hard. And again, because the data lags, sometimes we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But some of these questions, I think, are really vital on, before giving you a new medicine, how often did the hospital staff tell you what the medicine was for?
Mm-hmm.
For example, I was given these nitroglycerin tablets, and they just said, take these.
Mm-hmm. That's a scary thing.
You know, now, I sort of knew why. Mm-hmm. But now they didn't tell me because they wanted to prevent it, or they thought I was actually having one, as all that.
Right.
Before giving you any new medicine, how often did the hospital staff describe possible side effects the way you could understand? Now, we're having one hospital, we're really in St. David's in Austin, Texas right now, who's really a top performer.
Right.
But they're always wanting to get better.
Right.
And they're right now with bedside shift report, even having the patient repeat or describe, here's the medication I'm taking and here are the side effects, because they not only want them to hear it in the hospital from the staff,
mm-hmm.
they want them to know it when they leave the hospital. What mm-hmm. are some things that you're seeing in this? Because this is one of the lower scoring areas at times.
It is one of the lower scoring areas, and I think part of that is because it's a bit new for us, and it's a paradigm shift for us in nursing, especially because, you know, maybe 30 years ago, we didn't necessarily want to tell a patient about a side effect because, you know, we sometimes then might get the side effect if we think about it.
And I think you've treated people like me before, though.
Yeah, I think so. Well, you know, it's very common, you know. If you think about something
that was
you
nice
hear,
of you to say it was common.
It's very, very common.
I have to
common.
Always go in and say to the doctor, and remember, you're dealing with somebody that has very easily.
The power of suggestion,
yeah, right?
Yeah, maybe I am a little nauseated.
Yeah.
So we have to train our nurses that as they're giving that medication, they need to say, this, for example, let me just say, I'm giving you a pain medication, right?
Uh-huh.
And I, in the past, would have said, Mr. Suter, I'm giving you this pain medication. This'll let me know if you uh-huh. have any nausea, right? Okay, uh-huh. which is a common side
right.
effect.
Yes.
But I would not have told you nausea is a common side effect of this medication. If you have that, make sure and let me know.
Right.
I might have just told you, let me know if you have any nausea. You see the subtle difference?
Right.
We have to say this is a common side effect. If you have it, make sure and let me know. The
right.
other thing is that we're suggesting that staff do is if they have especially a new medication, with the Pyxis and with technology these days, uh-huh. they have great printable patient information about that medication in language that patients can understand.
Yes.
So what we're suggesting is print that out. I've got a new medication I'm giving to you. All I have to do is print out the coaching side effects.
Mm-hmm.
I can go in and I can give that to the patient. What we're suggesting nurses do is give that as they're giving the medication and highlight this is a side effect with a yellow highlighter.
Right.
So it's really drawing that patient
right.
attention. You may have this as a side effect. Completely different than in the past.
Well, what I like, too, is I was one time getting a medication, and I'm really don't worried about side effects all the time. And I said to this doctor, well, do you have any medication without side effects? And he said, Quint, let me give you the real deal here.
Mm-hmm.
There is no medication without side effects. So I think reducing that, well, it's, you know, we're giving this medication because we feel it's going to be helpful.
That's right.
Like any medication, there are certain side effects. But then the choice is, where do you want to go here? If you want your pain, you might have some nausea.
That's right.
And
we can treat that too.
And where can you live with it? And how can you live with it? And,
that's exactly,
you know,
right.
Even something simple. My dad one time went home, took medication, and he on an empty stomach. You know, it's those little things that aren't little. When you're the patient.
Yeah, and you need to know those interactions. So, for example, if he took his pain medication on an empty stomach, like me, I would think, you know, oh, well, I'm going to take some milk or something like that to, like,
right.
help coat my stomach. Well, I may not know that this particular medication, if it's an antibiotic, can't be taken with dairy products. So
right.
those are the type of things that if we really want to improve our clinical outcomes and our compliance, we need to be telling patients and teaching them about it. They're the ones that are going to be going home and be responsible for their own care.
Right. Well, it's Nate here because in our radio audience today, we have a few people, and it's Nate because they're all sitting here and they're not clinicians, shaking their head with, this makes sense. My dad was in the hospital. I wish they would have done this.
Yes.
And we're really talking, again, I tell people, when I talk to groups, and I know you do too, after I walk them through the questions, walk them through what we're trying to do, the core clinical competency of it, the good values of courteous respect, those things, I say, now, even if there wasn't a survey tool, wouldn't we still be doing these things?
Yeah.
And the answers are always yes, because it's really more about values than scores.
That's exactly right.
Let me ask you a question in our last 6 minutes here, because readmissions are huge. You know, yesterday I was in an organization, a very good organization, Palmetto Healthcare, and and they're doing some really neat things. And at MUSC, too, they've really reduced their infections. They've done a lot of great things. In fact, I gave them the name of Good Samaritan in Downers Grove, another organization that hospital-acquired pneumonia, mm-hmm. central line infections, door-to-balloon time, just best in class results, because we try to network our organizations. But it was really interesting because the issue is so much on readmissions. Mm-hmm. Now, we know that we do certain things to reduce readmissions with our post-care phone calls. Mm-hmm. But talk to me, because they have questions such as, after you left the hospital, did you go directly home, of course, or someone else?
That's one of those screening questions right. We talked about.
Yeah, but then they say, well, during your hospital stay, did doctors, nurses, or other staff talk to you about whether you would have help you need when you left the hospital? And here, during the hospital stay, did you get information in writing mm-hmm. about what symptoms or health problems to look out for after you left the hospital? Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about what you're seeing across the country to really, I think, improve. Because according to research, and this is research I've read, mm-hmm. only 16% of patients when they leave a hospital truly understand the discharge or home care instructions.
You know, well, if anybody's been dismissed from a hospital, from a typical hospital, they get the order that they can go home, they want to go home. And mm-hmm. so the nurses are giving the patient all of this information, and here's your instructions on how to take your medicine, and here's this, and here's this, and do you have your follow-up appointment? And it's mm-hmm. just all kind of thrown at them, and the patient's only interested in getting out the door because they want to go home.
By the way, with your intensity, I can tell you were a critical care nurse.
That's true. But, you know, that's reality. That's what mm-hmm. happens. So what we have to really do is step back and look at our whole discharge process.
Yes.
So that's something that's very complicated, very complex. We can't address with just a couple of tactics. But I can give one that
Please.
I've seen work really well is the hospitals have created colorful, like a red or a blue or something very mm-hmm. noticeable, folders with double pockets that the patient is given on admission. And it says on the cover, discharge instructions. And every piece of valuable information that they're given throughout their 3 or 4 or 5 or however many days they're in the hospital mm-hmm. goes into that folder. It's not given at the very end.
You're so anxious to get out.
Yeah, you just gave me that information, right. Put it in my folder. And then a lot of them are white, or if they even have folders, they mix in or they get lost with all the other papers. So what I'm telling people is do a colorful folder, give it at admission. It's an important document. Mm-hmm. As they're being wheeled down by the transporter should say to that patient, where is your discharge instructions folder? It's important you keep that in a noticeable place, that you take good care of it.
Right.
So I just think we have to really look at the whole process, but one little thing you can do, colorful folder for your instructions.
And I believe as a hospital, we can't think that we're the beginning of care and the end of care. Many times we're the middle of care.
And we are.
According to Gerald Hickson, as you know, we in Studer Group do a lot of work with Vanderbilt, who I just looked at their HCAHPS results, are phenomenal for an academic medical. They're phenomenal for any provider, but for an academic medical center, they're near the real, real top.
Right.
Because we always pull and we look. And just for the listeners, there are differences in geography. I mean, we find that, and you know, there's no explanation yet why, but there's certain regions of the country where people tend to be more pleased with their care versus others. Now, in every region, there's those real high performers, so everyone can be better, but we're looking at the data as it varies, and we see some that really do wonderful things, whether you're small, you're middle, you're big, no matter what system you are.
That's right.
We have winners, big winners, in almost every region of the United States.
We absolutely do.
But one of the things they've really been working on in this whole idea is the handoffs, because mm-hmm. according to Gerald Hickson's research on litigation, mm-hmm. most healthcare occurs litigation, mm-hmm. and litigation occurs when somebody hasn't had an experience, and most of the time it's not a poor clinical outcome, it's just a bad experience, which then they parlay into a clinical issue, mm-hmm. is because of bad handoffs, and bad explanations. Mm-hmm. And what we're talking about in home care instructions and discharge planning is all about handoffs and explanations.
That's right. That transition home is so critical. But even handoffs within the hospital,
yes,
with our bedside shift report, with our hourly rounding, some of those key strategies that we teach and coach hospitals on. But rounding on every patient every day by the manager, number one thing in my mind, because we're proactively dealing with any of those issues.
And we're preventing. And what we always say when you round, we say, tell me about the clinical care. What did you learn about the quality of care? Well, we're going to have to wrap up. Karen, if somebody would like to write you an email directly, how would they get to you directly through email?
Karen, K-A-R-E-N dot Cook, C-O-O-K, at Studer Group, S-T-U-D-E-R-G-R-O-U-P .com.
Great. And for our listeners, we're going to end with the song by Alex Call and Lisa Carey from their CD Passion and Purpose called The Calling. And Karen, I am so glad about your calling. You had a great calling to be a great nurse. You've had a calling to be a great wife, a great mother, and probably the most loyal Kansas State fan in the United States of America.
Go Cats!
And you've had a great calling for Studer Group and what you do, and we're blessed to have you. And thank you very much for being on our show today.
Thank you.